I'm Mike Webb, and welcome to the ProPublica podcast. It's been widely noted that when ProPublica was first announced, we received more than 1,000 resumes from people who wanted to work here. One of those who made the cut was senior editor Susan White. During her time here, Susan's overseen several investigations that had real-world impact, such as our series on natural gas drilling and our work reporting on problems with tainted Chinese drywall. She was also part of the editing team that helped us bring home our first Pulitzer Prize for the deadly choices at Memorial. Sadly, Susan is leaving us to move back to the West Coast in sunny San Diego. But before she left, we invited her on to talk about being an editor and her work experience here. Susan has had a long and varied career in the news business, including stints as a reporter and television critic at the Lexington Herald Leader and as the Enterprise editor at the San Diego Union Tribune. But before we get to Susan, we wanted to ask ProPublica's managing editor, Steve Engelberg, what made you hire Susan?
Susan wrote a cover letter that was so passionate and so convincing and so obviously full of energy that I turned to Paul Steiger and said, I have to meet this woman. And so we flew her in for an interview, and she turned out to be every bit as intelligent and energetic fascinated by investigative reporting as her letter suggested. We delayed a few days, called her up, and offered her the job. She had actually taken another job on the other end of the country in a much more rural area, and I said, well, you have a choice. You can come to New York City, or you can live in a much different kind of climate. And she thought it over for the evening and decided to come with us, and we were very grateful that she did.
So a cover letter actually landed her the job.
You bet it did. And she wasn't the only one. You know, we're in a writing business, Mike. And if you can really write in such a way as you catch people's eye, then that's a very good sign.
And with that special introduction, welcome to the podcast, Susan.
Thank you. It's nice to be here, Mike.
All right. Well, let's start in a general way. What do you do on a day-to-day basis?
Every day is different. Usually I start talking to reporters even before I take off my coat, if it's in the winter, or before I get to my office, because things have happened overnight, and so I'll stop by desks and say, you know, how's it going? Has anything happened today? And then I go in and I'll to my office and I'll read the jillion emails I have and look at any stories that I have waiting to be edited.
From conversations that we've had, I get a sense that you always try to put yourself in the reader's position.
Yes. I try to ask the most basic questions. And my reporters are really good because they don't say, oh, you know, they don't make faces at me. But I will ask the very most basic questions.
And is that part of your editing process? Do you think it makes you a better editor?
It works both ways, because as they're reporting, it really helps, because I'm asking them essentially the questions that any smart reader would ask, and they can then incorporate the answers into their reporting. In the editing process, I really do that. I mean, we discuss that often. Will the reader understand this? Because by the time we're in the editing process, I know a lot about the story too. So by that time, we both need to sit and think each sentence through.
Why don't we walk through an investigation? How does an idea originate, and what do you tell a reporter to do once you hear that idea?
Okay. I rarely tell reporters to do anything. I don't think that's the role of the editor. I guide, I steer, and I encourage and I help shape, but I don't give reporters marching orders.
Is that because you think they're wise enough to know the first steps?
Right. Well, reporters, the best ideas come from reporters, not editors. I don't think since I've been at ProPublica, I have assigned anyone a story. I rarely have throughout my editing career. And so usually a reporter comes to me and we have this idea and we vet it at the top here at ProPublica, because if we're going to work on something for a long time, we want to make sure that it's going to work
impact.
At. Right. And it will have the right impact. And, you know, not everything is a sure thing. Sometimes you'll go down a road and the story won't be what you thought it was. But once we're in the go mode, the reporter just who had the idea, of course, has all these ideas about how they're going to report. And so we talk about that. And as they start doing the reporting, we start this feedback.
Conversations
all the time.
And are you asking them more questions about what they're finding?
Yes. And I'm also saying, hey, have you thought about this? And, you know, what about this? I may suggest talking to other reporters that I know have some knowledge in that area. I will push them into other areas that they may not have thought of.
When do you want them to start writing?
And not until they've asked all the basic questions.
But does that help shape, give it an outline?
Well, I think it's hard to write. I've known reporters in the past who tried to write every time they did an interview, and what you end up with, you're just tied up in knots. And it's one thing to take notes, you know, take really good notes, and after you do an interview, and you know, focus your thoughts. That's one thing, but you don't want to start trying to write your story until you really understand the story, because when you go into a story, it may not turn out to be what you thought.
Why do you have the reporters writing so much?
Well, they're not writing so much. I will send back thoughts. Then they will send back to me. It'll make me think of different things. They'll think of different things. And also, I'm not the kind of editor who says, this is the way I think you ought to write it. More often, I'll say, now, is this really the right way to approach this? Can you add more here? And so in the process, the report becomes deeper.
Okay. And then when you get the final draft, or what you think could be the final draft, what's next?
Well, in an ideal situation, we read it aloud.
Really?
Yeah. It's really the best.
It gives you the flow of the story.
It gives you the flow, and also it helps you cut things that aren't necessary, and also it helps you spot errors. We don't always have that luxury, but when we do, we sure do it. Sebastian Rotella did the two-part story on Mumbai, and we were on a terrible deadline for that story. It ran in the Washington Post, and each day was about 4,000 words. That was two open pages in the Washington Post each day. And Sebastian and I read both of those aloud, and he was in D.C., and I was sitting in my dining room in Brooklyn, and we were on deadline, and it helped so much because it helps him, because he's extremely precise, which is one reason I like working with him. He's so careful of every detail, and when you hear it, it's different than seeing it. I can't stress that enough.
That's really interesting. Anything else as far as the investigative process goes?
Okay, sometimes too, I'll have someone else read the story who knows nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always a good thing.
Sometimes that's me.
Sometimes that's you. Or anyone who walks into my office, I'll say, hey, let me read this to you.
Come here, guinea pig.
No, and it works. It works because by this time, I know too much.
Okay. Now, you said ideas don't come from you. Where do they come from?
Well, editors sit at their desks. Being an editor is not the most adventurous thing. We live vicariously through our reporters. Reporters are out in the field, and they have a sense, and a story is sort of an organic thing. Each story is different, and it has its own personality. And each story spawns other stories. Even in the, may be the same, in the same topic area or not.
Yeah, that's happened a lot with Abram, I think.
Yes, a lot with Abram. And the other thing, I said I don't suggest stories, but what I do is I may suggest a story that the reporter has discussed with me and maybe didn't recognize it as a story. Because in some cases, something they told me sticks with me, and that becomes a story.
One of the reporters you work with came to you when you first started working here, and he said, I came here to work with Steve Engelberg.
That was Abram. We've laughed about that. Well, okay, this is a great example. Abram and I did not know each other. This was when ProPublica was a room full of empty desks, mostly. And I was the first editor here, and Abram was here, and I had met him. That's all. And Steve came over to me and said, I have to go somewhere. I think he was flying somewhere. And he said, can you edit this story? And I swear he said it was about oil drilling. I didn't know Steve very well. I didn't know Abram at all. And I said, sure. And it was a newspaper story, and it was going to the Albany Times-Union, and we had somewhat of a deadline. So then Abram and I are working together. Abram had primarily written for magazines. Mm-hmm. It is a totally different world. And he had written this story, and we went back and forth and back and forth and to get it right for the Albany Times-Union, which is definitely not a magazine and, you know, has one-sentence paragraphs. It's a very good paper, but it's not a magazine. So Abram and I worked until it was about 10 o'clock when we finally left. And we took a cab home. We both live in Brooklyn, and I could just feel him radiating, like, because I think he hated the process because I was converting his beautiful prose into newspaper style. And so the next day, but I thought at the time, I thought this guy is so smart and it would be really exciting to work together. So the next morning we talked and I said, oh, Abram, I said, how do you think it went? And he said, well, you know, it was fine. And he was he's extremely professional and extremely dispassionate about these things. And I admire that in him so much. And he said, but, you know, he said, I really came here to work with Steve Engelberg.
See, I would have been insulted.
I wasn't insulted at all because he didn't do it. It wasn't like I don't like you. And I came here to work with Steve Engelberg, too. So... it was fine. But I went home to my husband that night and I said, boy, I really want to work with this guy. Well, since then, Abram and I work great together.
Why? What happened?
Well, it wasn't anything that happened. We just started working together and I began to understand him and he began to trust me, I think. And the great thing is I've learned a lot from him and I think he's learned from me. So it's the perfect relationship that you don't have very often. I can now, I write, if he needs a sentence filled in, I can write it in Abram's language if I need a sentence for him. So...
What happens when it is more adversarial or the reporter isn't meeting the standards you'd like them to? Then what would you do?
We just keep going back and forth and back and forth. I've never had a problem. Even at the Union Tribune, when I was at the San Diego Union Tribune before, and I think people there knew that I was pretty intense, and the people who wanted to work for me, I mean, they were intense too. And so they came to it like that, expecting to do a lot of drafts, having a lot of rewriting, and the people who didn't want to do that didn't want to work with me, and they never signed into my area. So I always had, and I can say I always had, there were a lot of people who wanted to work with me, but then I know there were others who never would have done it.
Okay, now you worked as a reporter and as an editor. Is one more appealing than the other?
Well, you know, Bill Keller, the editor of the New York Times, announced recently he's stepping down and he is going to be writing again. And I think some people who don't understand this world think, oh, that's, you know, just a cop-out. Why would anyone who's been editor of the New York Times want to write again? I understand that fully because I never thought about being an editor. I only wanted to be a writer all of my career. I became an editor. It was totally accidental. And I think writing is the hardest thing, and that's why I admire Abram and Joaquin and Sebastian Motella, all my reporters, because I know how hard it is to do what they do. It is the hardest thing.
Yeah, so it probably makes you a better editor, having been on the other side.
I think it makes me a better editor, and I understand why Bill Keller wants to be a writer again, because there's always that part of you that wants to do that.
How is being an editor here at ProPublica different than at a newspaper?
We have time, and that's really a gift. Not only do we have the time to edit things, but we stick with things. At a newspaper, the attention span, not just of the public, but of the newsroom itself, wanes very quickly. So you might be into a subject, and the subject has not been done to death. You have not explored all the possibilities, but, you know, the institution is ready to move on to the next thing. That's just the nature of newspapers. Here, I really, when I see something that's not quite right or that people need to understand better, it bothers me personally to leave it too early. And we can stick with it.
And so you don't think the Union Trib or another newspaper would have stuck with the fracking stories or the drywall stories? Because we've done innumerable.
No, you couldn't. I don't think many newspapers can afford to do that. Maybe the New York Times. I don't know of other newspapers that can do that. It's just not possible. It doesn't mean, I think there are a tremendous number of very talented reporters and editors at newspapers. The difference is that they don't have the opportunity to do this just because the nature of the beast is so different.
What advice do you have for reporters and editors?
I think for editors, I think that unless you love the craft and you really respect the reporters, I don't think you should be an editor. I think the most important thing is that you care deeply about the reporters and want them to do their best, and that you want your path in their work to be invisible. You don't want their stories to be your stories. You want to be their supporter, their champion, the person who nudges them when they need to be nudged.
Susan, before you go, do you have any closing thoughts about ProPublica and the work we do?
I do. Not just about the work we do, but the work that any newspaper, any reporter out there who is trying to do in this era of cutbacks. I think that investigative journalism is hugely important to our democracy. And there is no way that people can understand the inner workings of government without this kind of reporting. There is no way. And reporters at newspapers can do this on a smaller scale. And I don't think they should be discouraged. And I think that even in this time when their bosses may not appreciate what they do, I think the thing to focus on is their readers, because readers do care.
Well, Susan, thank you so much. We're really going to miss you here. You were one of the first people. You helped get ProPublica off the ground, and we're very sad to see you go, but wish you the best.
Thank you.
This is the part where I normally say you can read Susan's work at blank URL. Instead, spend some time reading our fracking, Pakistan, Gulf oil spill, or drywall coverage, and you'll get a feel for the velvet touch of senior editor Susan White. Now on to our official Say the Darndest Things Tumblr quote of the week. Since your announcement to seek the presidency, you have consistently attacked the honorable profession of lobbying. Lobbyists play an important role in the legislative process, serving as educators to elected officials. Who said it? Howard Marlowe, the president of the American League of Lobbyists, in a letter to President Obama opposing a proposal that would require federal contractors to disclose political contributions. Okay, that's it for this show. Thanks to Minnie Cho for producing it, and thanks to you for listening. For ProPublica, I'm Mike Webb. We'll see you soon.